Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's what we've been waiting for.
It's Friday.
Friday.
TGIF. And that can only mean one thing.
The weekend is landing.
It's time for the Reardon Round Table.
Yes, that is correct.
Now, here's your host, Mark Reardon, on KMOX.
Well, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Friday afternoon, and it is hot and sticky out there. Nice and cool here in the studio. I'm going to try to get you through it here with the Reardon Roundtable for a Friday, the triumphant return after just a week off of Jane Duker.
Yes, I am back and tan.
Tan and well-rested.
Well-rested, I'm not so sure, but at least tan.
Well,
so
I have not noticed. John Lamping, who's also here this afternoon, the hyperventilating has kind of been minimized in the last couple of weeks on Twitter, wouldn't you say, John?
Things got a lot quieter.
Yeah. Did you unfollow like I did?
Earlier on, yeah.
No, maybe I'm muted.
I come back.
But I'm following you now. Sarah Fenske from the RFT is also here. How are you, Sarah?
I'm doing very well.
And thanks. You've never met Mr. Lamping, so we'll mix it up here. Let me start with this. We're going to talk a little bit about the report from the Inspector General and cover a variety of topics, including some of the things that the president said this morning in an impromptu news conference and on Fox and Friends. And this comes from Fox and Friends, so take a listen to this.
The headline right now from the Wall Street Journal, DOJ Clinton report blasts Comey and agents but finds no bias in conclusion.
Well, the end result was wrong. I mean, there was total bias. I mean, when you look at Peter Strzok and what he said about me, when you look at Comey, all his moves. So I guess, you know, it's interesting. It was a pretty good report. And then I say that the IG blew it at the very end with that statement, because when you read the report, it was almost like Comey. He goes point after point about how guilty Hillary is. Mm-hmm. And then he said, but we're not going to do anything about it. The report, the IG report, was a horror show. I thought that one sentence of conclusion was ridiculous.
What about apparently the lovebirds talking about you? We will stop it.
Yeah, they said they will stop me. Well, in the meantime, the economy hit an all-time high this morning. Never been better. Jobless rate, the lowest, the best in 44 years, just came out.
All right, there you go. President Trump this morning, Fox and Friends. John, I'm going to start with you on this one. What did you think of the IG report? And to me, it sort of does clearly spell out that there was some bias involved at the FBI, that eventually Congress is going to have to take a look at some of this stuff and try to fix it. But I don't know how you do.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's kind of easy to understand bias too. The whole idea of these FBI agents having an affair, and I think there's another couple that actually had an affair at the time are now married, and the plain spoken text messages about their disappointment with Trump having won. I mean, clearly shows bias. By the way,
good thing they don't live here. Kim Gardner would have filed charges against him, right?
Well, it depends on what party they're in. I do think it's kind of an inside baseball thing. I think that the report, you know, could it have been more sensational, more damning? Most certainly it could have been. I don't know that it breaks through the kind of indifference that I think the ordinary person is at right now. There was a poll last week that came out that said, explained how both Democrats and Republicans are really tired right now of news, and Republicans far more so. I think 80% of Republicans said they're starting to tune out a little bit. So that report probably won't break through to the average person.
I think you're probably right about that. It's the summer. People aren't paying as much attention. It wasn't like a bombshell. Some of this we sort of knew about the text messages from the two lovebirds anyway. But I think that some of this stuff, and I know it's hard to take the partisan hat off, but you should be troubled, Jane, by some of the stuff that's in this report, right?
Well, no. I mean, one, I'm heartened by the fact that the Inspector General did a thorough job. So, and I think there's stuff in there that makes nobody look good. So there's definitely some problems that need to be looked at on all sides. I think the president indicating somehow that this totally exonerates him of colluding with the Russians when the report had nothing to do with that. It was a little weird, but there was some stuff in there. And I think that they're going to have the IG at a Senate hearing. And I think the Senate hearing is going to, I think Lindsey Graham indicated that he was going to question the conclusion to say, you know, why do you believe the conclusion matches the report? And I think that's a good thing.
How about the fact that it was also Comey was using a private email server, too,
right,
while he's investigating all this?
Right. I mean, it's just the ironies are, you know, insane. So, you know, I mean, the FBI needs to be looked at just like everybody else. And so I know that one of them was taken off the investigation. I don't know if they should be fired, you know, and I think that's something that the Senate could look at.
I think that. You know, I wrote a column about this that'll be up on camwatch.com a little bit later. You know, I've been talking about bias in the media for 2.5 decades now, and I sort of maybe naively put my trust in organizations like the FBI. And in fact, I defended Jim Comey quite a bit even last year. And then when the book came out, I thought, oh, that was a dumb thing to do. But Sarah, how troubled are you by this report?
I think there is some troubling stuff in here. But it's fascinating to me because there are lots of evidence of agents and people behaving in a way where they clearly didn't want Trump to win. On the other hand, the totality of what some of these actions they took, even though they were trying to maybe not help Trump, ended up helping him. If you look at the timing of this, where like they stalled on this report out of New York for like a month, and then by the time they finally acted on it, because the agent there was just pushing them, like, come on, you got to look at these emails we just found on Wiener's computer. They finally do it. It's the worst possible timing for Hillary.
Right.
So the sum total of this report is kind of like, yeah, Comey stepped outside the lines and actually really hurt Hillary, even as all these low-level agents are doing things that show their bias against
Trump. There is a lot of irony there. You're right.
Yeah. Bias going all the way around. I mean, yeah. You are dealing with human beings. I mean, and so, you know, the key is there was something in there for everybody to hate, which probably means you're closer to the truth
right.
than most.
But nobody in the report, their intent was to help Trump, though. There was nobody trying to help Trump.
Nobody.
Inadvertently,
but Comey,
it did.
It's hilarious to me that he briefly became such a hero of the left. And now all these people who hate the CIA, hate the FBI, they might be going back to sort of not liking Comey as much again for a moment.
And it's still not really clear why he did it. I mean, there are DOJ guidelines that say don't screw with elections. Okay,
yeah.
So we don't do this stuff to screw with elections. Those guidelines are there for a reason. They've always been there for a reason.
Yeah, but I think what happened here, and I think the book reveal and the book tour revealed a lot about Jim Comey that I think that some of us didn't know and some people did know. But if you go back to, look, I could not have been more happy 2 years ago when he held that news conference. That was my soundbite of the year when he outlined all of the allegations or the truths about Hillary's campaign and the email. And, you know, made the point that it wasn't enough to file the charges. But that was pretty damaging to Hillary Clinton. Then you fast forward to the fall as well. But I think
what we
learned about Jim Comey was that it was a lot of times it was all about Jim Comey. I mean, he wanted to be in the spotlight. I think that was a big part of it.
Yeah. I mean, because I don't think there was ever a sort of a law enforcement explanation for why he would want to come back again and talk about Hillary's emails.
Well, it was fascinating. Yeah,
while not talking about the Trump investigation.
He literally had to like mislead the DOJ in order to do that press conference. Like they thought they were going to make a statement together, and he just like threw him under the bus. And so I don't think he was politically biased. I think the conclusion is right there. But the ways that he acted were just a little weird and threw a big monkey wrench into what's supposed to be the process.
Right. Yeah. Who bought that book? Seriously.
I actually have it.
I didn't.
As a gift?
You paid for it?
I did not
gift
pay for it.
To you.
No.
Okay. All right. Well, that's different. That's different.
Thank you.
Then, yeah, I can see having copies of books that publicists send, but buying the book. I'd love to know. I'd actually love to know the final
actual
tally
sales,
on that.
Like right. Outside of his family and friends. You know.
Because, as opposed to Fire and the Fury, I would love to have a comparison.
Well, Fire and the Fury sold very well, I think. You know, we could probably find out.
Yeah.
Hey, Dave Klein in the other room. He's bored during the roundtable anyway. I think he's playing video games. Would you look that up? See if you can. Can you see if you could find the book total sales for Comey's book and for Fire and the Fury?
I'm curious.
And see what we come up with there.
50-1.
Yeah.
Well, it might be something like that. Look, the bottom line here, and it's not just the two FBI agents. They notice or they make note that former President Obama was one of the 13 individuals that Mrs. Clinton had contact with. So then, does that mean that he knew about the private server, even though he said he learned about it the same time everyone else did? You have the situation with Andrew McCabe and Peter Kadzik, who sort of recused themselves but didn't go far enough, according to the IG. They should have maybe stepped out earlier. Then you have Loretta Lynch, who, of course, was the AG, and you have that infamous moment on the tarmac, which is one of the reasons that Comey said he felt he needed to come out and say the things that he did. He cited that instance, but then they criticized her in the report to retain involvement in the probe because there was even that appearance of bias. So it's complicated.
You know what,
it's a good read, and there are some issues that need to be hopefully investigated.
The conclusion is interesting because I think, you know, there was a lot of goofy stuff that happened, but really, did it change the outcome? It's sort of like the collusion debate. We could talk about collusion all we want, but no one is saying that it changed the actual outcome of the election. And would this have actually, would all the shenanigans
I don't think
have
it
changed?
Did.
And I don't think.
Do you, John, do you think that what happened with Hillary and Comey, do you think that that.
No. I mean, it made Hillary a worse candidate for sure. But, you know, it remains to be seen. I think midterms in the next election cycle will be important. But, I mean, a populist movement occurred in that cycle, and nobody saw it coming. Everyone thought the odds were totally against Trump. And that's how he won the election, in my mind.
I think it did hurt her. I do think that part of the reason people acted the way they acted is they thought that she was going to win, and they wanted to come across as being fair. And so they didn't see his surge coming. But I think it did help in his surge. I know some people who are kind of like, oh, again, Hillary. And maybe part of the enthusiasm gap had to do with that. Certainly. There were other things that made her not a great candidate.
She was a bad candidate before this came
totally
out.
Totally agree with that.
That's why I have trouble saying that what these FBI agents did had any effect on the investigation. I don't think so, and I don't think that what they did had any effect on the election.
All right, hang on. It's the Reardon Roundtable for a Friday. Jane Duker, Sarah Fenske from the Riverfront Times, former State Senator John Lapping. A lot more to cover here as we move through the afternoon. Plus, a little bit later, we have Fritz's frozen custard that is delivered to the panel.
Now, back to the Reardon Roundtable. Once again, your host, Mark Reardon. On KMOX.
All right, welcome back. I do want to mention, Jane, for the next hour, and I was kind of raving about this a couple of weeks ago, this movie about Mr. Rogers,
yeah,
Won't You Be My Neighbor? Yeah, it opens today, and Yo-Yo Ma's son, Nicholas, very close with Fred Rogers, as was his dad, and his dad is featured in the movie, and it's really, really good. And I told you at the time, I'm not even like a big Mr. Rogers guy, but we'll talk about that in the next
exciting hour.
I'm looking forward to talking with Nicholas Ma. It's 2:19, and let me reintroduce the panel here. Jane Duker, former State Senator John Lamping, Sarah Fenske from the RFT. Let me take this opportunity. We're going to talk about North Korea and the summit and where that might be heading, but the president provided us with some pretty good sound bites this morning that we can launch off of on those particular topics, and this one was on North Korea.
He's spoken so passionately about the circumstances that led to Otto Warmbier's death.
Yeah.
In the same breath, you're defending now Kim Jong-un's human rights records. How can you do that?
You know why? Because I don't want to see a nuclear weapon destroy you and your family.
Well, okay? And by the way, you declared the nuclear threat from North Korea is over.
Because I don't want to see a nuclear weapon destroy you and your family.
I have a feeling of uneasiness getting so chummy with Kim, okay? But just because I know how this president operates now, and there's a part of me that is easing into a little calm territory on some of the criticism, only because we're not going to change him. And I think what he said there sums up what he thinks. He thinks the end game is worth it here if we can rid that peninsula.
I mean, I don't know. I think I do. I mean, look, we're not going to fix their human rights violations. And sometimes you have to, you got to start with the bigger picture that has.
Well, I think that's what he's doing. Yeah.
Right. And I think he was basically trying to say that to them without, because one narcissist knows how to talk to another narcissist. I mean, I hate to say it that way, but that is exactly right. So he knows what line he needs to cross. And if he goes out and says things that bother this guy, he'll snap just like he knows he snaps when people say it about him. So I think he knows the line he's walking. And I think, you know, as far as getting rid of the nuclear weapons, that's worth it to me. Now, that doesn't mean we condone it. It doesn't mean that he can. I'm not even saying he condones it. I just think that you have to start. You know, you got to get what you can. And then once we get the relationship going, that doesn't mean we can't, you know, expand to those kinds of things. But we can't squelch the whole deal for everything that we hate. It's not great. I don't like it to be that way. And I hope that there's a day. But you know, this to me was more important.
All right,
so
what
okay
do you think? You think it's okay sitting down? You know, he's been criticized not only by Democrats, but by Republicans, too, with some of the chumminess, if you will, with Kim.
I'm so torn on this, and I am no international policy expert whatsoever, but it's like we've tried isolating dictators over the years, and it doesn't really work.
Right.
But on the other hand, it's kind of like, do we want to be used for propaganda the way they're currently using Trump for propaganda? This video they made of him just gazing lovingly into their dictator's eyes, it does make me feel creepy. I don't know what the real solution is here. I don't know.
I get what you mean, though, because
I'd be fine.
I feel I have mixed feelings about it, too. I really do, because of the fact that if you're looking at the big picture here, this is historic and there's a real opportunity. I also don't really buy into some of the criticism about the specifics, because I think it was clear going in that there weren't going to be a lot of specifics. That's okay. It's a starting point. We move forward. But I also, John, wouldn't trust this regime any more than any
other regime on the planet.
Well, look, I went back and kind of skim read Art of the Deal again. This is just a negotiation. Think of, just, you know, step back for a second. Think what he, about what he did. What he did, he was the heavy guy for the last 12 months, last 14 months, called Rocket Man. We were doing military exercises. We dropped some bombs, like, on the border. So he was playing a hard guy. Now he's playing the soft guy.
I mean, he basically threatened to wipe him off the planet,
right? And now, look, maybe at the very end of all this, we do need to wipe him off the planet. If they were testing ballistic missiles over Japan, right? So if that's where we end up, do you want him just to get there at the beginning, or do you want him to do what he's done, which is talk tough, then not try to negotiate? And if you go back to Art of the Deal, this is what he does. He goes and he calls you a name, then he gives you a hug, then he negotiates some more.
Well, he's doing it on trade right now too.
Well, I actually think that what's going on in Korea is part of what's going on in China. Okay, we're negotiating with China, and you know, I'm operating the assumption that North Korea is controlled by China, which I think is the case. What do you think China's doing behind the scenes? So China, they're trying to get North Korea really close to a deal. So if he actually strikes a deal, the guy's going to win the Nobel. He should win the Nobel Prize if he strikes a deal. Okay, well, the Chinese know that too. They know, okay, let's get this thing really close for Trump, and then maybe he'll pull back on tariffs. So it's all just a big negotiation. It's pretty straightforward and easy to understand. I get it. The establishment Republican foreign policy people, they're freaked out by this because actually having the meeting validates the guy. How we normally do business, the Democrats, I don't know. I mean, I saw some poll the other day. The Democrats don't want anything good to happen because then Trump would get credit for it. Go back and reread Art of the Deal. He's just negotiating with both the Chinese and the North Koreans at the same time.
But then I have issue with the fact that, one, he lied and said that Obama was the one that got us to a brink of war when he was the one that actually did that, which is fine. You can't have it both ways. You can't have Art of the Deal and you're the tough guy and then blame Obama for it. Second of all, we don't need to be declaring war on Canada and all the other, like, you know, collateral damage that he's creating. That's not helpful either. I mean, I get it that, you know, I'm all for, I don't think you should ever not talk. That's stupid. I mean, if Obama had done this, though, the right would have gone bonsai, but that's a different issue.
John, in fairness, they would have.
No,
I think she's right about that.
Well, going bonsai, the Republican establishment is going bonsai, okay? They don't like what he's doing either. You mentioned Canada. What did he do with Canada? So Trudeau comes down, big hugs, big kisses, guy's awesome. He's our buddy. This time last year, right?
Yeah, his wife looks great.
Right. So I'm saying Trump did exactly the same thing. He does all that.
Yeah, now, what was the deal with that? That's right. I forgot. That was a nice hug. Right. Anyway, go ahead. Flashing back to last summer.
But now they're negotiating. So now
I think it's cute that you think this is all advertent. I don't. But I, you know, look, I'm giving the guy credit for what, but I to act like this is some, you know, advertent strategy.
No, I think it is because I think it's been pretty clear. This is how he handles. Okay, fine. Some of it's not, because you can't map everything out. Right. It's interesting though, and again, Sarah, I'm not a foreign policy expert. I have my opinions on this. I think these things are very complicated. But the Joint Chiefs told President Obama that the only way to fix this is to go in with ground troops, probably, and that would cost at the very least 20,000 lives. So there's no appetite for that in this country, I think, for anyone
right now.
Well, absolutely. But then that gets to the bigger question. The experts are going to have to figure this out. Is it even possible to do what you're trying to accomplish here with denuclearization and maybe fix what's going on in that peninsula? So I don't know the answer to that.
We're trying. I mean, there's no down, to my view, there's no downside of trying, because at least they're not escalating. So, okay, so we've stopped that. And look, this is going to be a long road. The idea that he's putting up the mission accomplished banner is sort of ridiculous. But we're going the right direction, and I'm willing to give him that. And it's going to be 2 years, but maybe it's 2 years where we're not threatening to bomb each other. So that's still a step forward.
And I'm going to agree here, maybe a little overstatement that achieved denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula in the tweet, right? A little ahead of himself.
But that's okay. He's feeling positive. He had a good week. I did a good job this week, he said. And I'll let you know when something's my fault. That was sort of my favorite comment of the day. I'm like, yeah, okay. I had a 3-year-old that would do that too.
Well, I think he did have a good week.
I agree, but he will never ever say that there is a time when there was something that is his fault.
Well, he does like to point that out. There's no doubt about that. All right, we'll take another break. We got plenty more to talk about here this afternoon on the Reardon Roundtable. Sarah Fenske from the RFT, former state senator John Lamping, and Jane Duker on the panel, the son of Yo-Yo Ma, Nicholas Ma, in the next hour because he was involved. He's one of the producers on Won't You Be My Neighbor, the new Fred Rogers movie, which opens today.
This is the Reardon Roundtable with your host, Mark Reardon, on KMOX.
All right, welcome back. Reardon Roundtable for a Friday. Jane Duker, Sarah Fenske from the RFT, former state senator John Lamping. So earlier this week, there was a neat little story about our friend Senator Claire McCaskill, and there was a guy on CNN who was analyzing this story about the private plane, and I kind of like this. He said she has a bad case of chronic reoccurring aviation problems, which, by the way, if you spell that out, if you're looking for your acronym, that's crap. Chronic reoccurring aviation problems. So how big of an issue for Senator McCaskill is that little story from this week?
Well, I think it's an interesting story, but I would hope that the Republican Party goes out of their way and does a good job making the case that Claire is not who she wants to be perceived to be in Missouri, that this idea that she's kind of a liberal, limousine liberal, that she's one way in Missouri and a different way everywhere else in the country. Things like having your private jet follow your RV, that will play very, very well in areas outside the urban suburban areas. Now, Claire makes a big point of the fact that she goes and visits all these non-urban suburban areas. It's really hard to judge how she performed in 2012 because that was the Todd Akin year, and even 2006 when it was the stem cell year. But her shtick in Missouri is, hey, I'm just a gal from Sedalia. I'm sassy, y'all, and I'm a country person. I know how to pass people on a country road. I mean, that's about right, right? I'm sitting next to some urban and suburban Democrat liberals. That's her brand. Well, when you got your private jet following your RV, that goes against that brand pretty good. Yeah. I mean, I guess the advantage of having the private jet in the rural roads is you don't have to pass anybody, right?
So, Sarah Fenske, I missed, did the RFT cover this? Because this seems right up your alley.
You know, we should have, and it just came.
Oh, there's media bias. Media bias 101, RFT, there it is.
It came on a day when there was just a lot of breaking news, and we've got such a small staff. And we were like, wow, you know, everybody's covering this. They're doing a pretty good job. We're going to zig where everyone zags. I will say, I agree with John. It's a very damning story for her because it plays into this perception or concern that people have about her. And those are the best hit pieces. You know, it's like Josh Hawley going to the gym. It worked because a lot of people secretly think he's lazy. This worked because everybody knows she's loaded and, you know, that she's been living this Washington life and you know, is maybe out of touch with small town Missouri. And so it really was damning for her.
Jane?
Well, I mean, at least she's going to see the voters. I mean, my goodness.
Oh, here
this
we
guy,
go. Here we
I mean,
go.
Lazy is, lazy is to say that. I mean, this guy just can't talk to the humans and say what you want about her, but she does get out there and talk to the humans. And at some point, to run a good campaign, you have to talk to the humans and you have to talk to the press and you have to, and Claire's, I mean, I give her that. She is not afraid to talk to anybody. She comes on here. She will go anywhere. She doesn't limit herself. Josh will not talk to people.
Well, I don't think that that's completely true, and I think that he is coming out of that a little bit. And
why? Because he finally agreed
well,
to talk to you?
No. Well, yeah, that's... But why? You got to look at the underlying...
Because you dogged him, that's why.
That's part of it, but it's not... Even though I'd like to take credit for pretty much everything, it's not me that dogged him. It's the national press that dogged him over those
and
issues.
They should have,
so there were a couple of different stories, you know, nationally, and that sort of lit a fire. Interestingly enough, as soon as the Politico reporter called and they found out that I was quoted in that, there was a call to me, hey, can we get him on?
Right,
but
good.
I wasn't the only one.
I mean, that's so classic. I mean, that's the thing. Claire is maybe a little bit out of touch with, like, your rural Missouri voter. But Josh, it just seems like everything that motivates him is coming from Washington, D.C.
He is
not paying attention to what's happening on the ground here.
But why would he not, he's such a terrible candidate, why would he at some points be leading in the polls? And this is a razor sharp, you know, close race right now. A lot can happen between now and November, but a lot can happen that could be bad for Senator McCaskill as well. So I've been unwilling to make a definitive call on this because I'm usually wrong about these things anyway. I've said from the very beginning, she is not someone to ever count out, despite what happened in 2016, despite the polling and the disconnect with outstate Missouri. I think that Josh is stepping up his game. I think he's a good candidate. I think he'll be a good senator. You guys would have disagree with that, Jane and Sarah. But this is going to be an interesting battle moving forward. Well, I think I'm fascinated just to watch it sort of unfold.
I think the campaign's begun. Okay, right now he's on a 100-city tour. You know, there's 113 counties, and that's one of the things people like to pull out. Please, maybe Clara Linda Plain. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe.
She uses her own money. But, I respect that.
But I think he started to campaign. He was very the interesting thing about Josh is Josh had a very difficult primary when he ran for attorney general. But he ran that campaign. If he runs this campaign the same way he ran that campaign, which is he came late to that campaign. Same thing he did this time. But once he got to the campaign, he's very focused, very disciplined. Look, if Todd Akin had won the primary and gone away for 90 days, Claire would have lost. Todd, and we know that, and you guys know that. And Josh knows that if he just stays disciplined and focused, and it's June 15th, he's completely focused on that first Tuesday in November.
Can he do that, though, when he does have a primary? I'm not saying that these are the most formidable candidates, but he can't assume this is his.
No.
Because there's two candidates, and there's going to be a slice of Greitens voters that are never going to forgive him.
No.
And I think that
Josh will win by at least 20 points.
The Greitens, whatever anger any kind of Greitens voters might have will be displaced by the feeling that Senator McCaskill has to go. Those are the same people that would support.
Except there's three people there.
No, well, I know the candidates.
Come on.
I've met the candidates. It's
Cortland.
Josh is doing exactly the right thing. His election is in the first week in November. Look, all we have to do is show every picture with her and Barack, who she was the first to endorse, every picture with her and Hillary, who she was one of the first to endorse in her time around, and that's all we have to do. Outside of the suburban areas, those two people pull, or maybe throw in a little bit Nancy Pelosi, those people pull negative. Huge, 60, 70, 80%. Josh needs to stay focused, disciplined. Also, it kind of helps, I think, the fact that he does work out and he's a young person. There's a big gap in age, okay? And there's older voters, younger voters. We're not good with younger voters. But Josh looks like a guy that might get like an extra 2, 3, or 4, or 5 points than a guy like me might get.
I don't see Josh Hawley getting the bro vote.
Is that what you called it?
Yeah. Did you see he wore a white shirt to a barbecue? It's like, come on. This is the guy.
This is the best they have, too.
That's all they have.
Oh, it's all they have. Like the plane.
It's 100 right. freaking degrees. Who doesn't wear white in the summer?
No, a white suit shirt.
I got you on the long sleeves. I'm going to say yes. That was bad.
Keds.
That was bad.
Do you want to talk about Keds? He wears Keds. I mean, he wears Keds and khakis. That's really cute, but yeah. I mean.
I'm sorry. Wait.
Did you say
cool.
it's really cute?
He's not cool.
So there won't be some suburban female voter that will just, when it comes time to vote, will go, well, I'm Democrat, but he's kind of cute. Like, all it takes is like 2 or 3. No. I'm just telling you, all it takes is like 2 or 3% of that suburban vote.
There are not that many gay Republicans, and women are smarter than that.
Absolutely. I think we can figure out what Democrat women
are. You know what's amazing to me, though? I talked to some people that are, I guess they would be more of the independent voters, middle of the road centrists, the types of people who would vote for either Republican or Democrat. We, as partisans, can't understand that. But there's a lot of dislike for Senator McCaskill that just doesn't. So her negatives are very high.
But it's always been there. That's what's interesting about her.
But she hasn't had an honest election. That's my point. Well, she ran against Todd
right.
and she
John's
ran against
right.
stem cells.
I guess so. Because, yeah, I mean, you can sort of poo-poo two wins. But, I mean, she has managed. There is always going to be a group. I agree with you. She has high negatives because, I mean, that's just her personality. But, I mean, it is amazing.
But are you surprised here? You know, the one thing that I have defended her in the past, and she's, you know, yeah, she's not afraid to come on the show. She comes on for a while. She was coming on more than Josh was in the past 7 months. But I drew a distinction with many of my listeners who I thought were unfairly criticizing her for aligning herself with the Uber left, the Chuck Schumers, the Dick Durbins, and that crowd. Lately, she has done that. You know, I think there has been separation.
Which is interesting because I think she was more, I think she's moved to the left more this time.
She has done that.
But the party has.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
And as importantly, the money. The real deep money in the Democratic side.
It's not
But Jane, doesn't that hurt her here? Why would she take that track if she's not afraid to stand up to her own party?
That's really interesting. I mean, you raised something very interesting.
Because of donors?
No, because the political, she doesn't need the money.
She personally doesn't need the money, but the political money in the Democratic Party is liberal.
Well, and I think there's also a lot of anger and passion on the far left progressive side. And they make a lot of noise.
And she wants enthusiasm.
It is exhausting when that's coming at you on social media and when they're, you know, I think she does want them to come out to vote and they get very easily upset.
Because that enthusiasm gap is going to make a big difference because I think a lot of the Trump renters are not as going to be as enthusiastic.
Okay, let me talk about one other aspect of this. And I think this is nonsense. John, I don't even think we've talked about this privately. Scott Charton tweeted something out the other day, and there's another tweet.
Please tell me it's true.
This is the dumbest thing, though. I don't even know what this radio station is. KCR, you know, it's not KRCG, which is a
KMOV
TV station.
KMOV did a poll.
What's that?
KMOV did a poll.
No, what I'm talking about is there's another story out there that cites no sources whatsoever that Eric Greitens is potentially going to run an independent candidate for the United States Senate and gather signatures. There's no way that's
pretty
true.
Please.
Is there, John?
How much do you think that's worth?
I don't know. But
I mean,
please.
At least $20 million, right?
Meaning what?
To do it or not do it?
To do it or not to do it.
Well, sure, because he would, him messing this up is control of the Senate. It's a big deal.
Well, let me read.
Very big pay deal. Him to be spoiler? Is that what you're?
Oh, please?
Really? There's no money in politics? Come on.
I know he needs money.
He's not going to do it. I mean, it's crazy, but.
Well, let me read this story. So this is from KCRG. I don't even know what this is.
No,
let's see what it says.
KCRG, is it?
KCRG. What is that?
That's
Springfield radio station. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So it says former Missouri Governor Eric Greitens could be back in the political spotlight a lot quicker than most thought. The Republican is entertaining the idea of running for one of Missouri's two U.S. Senate seats, but not on the Republican ticket as an independent, and they talk about the signatures he needs. The problem with this story
only
is,
10,000.
And we would never do this, and Sarah, you're a journalist, there is no attribution in that story.
Yeah, that's not KRCG.
They made,
that's
no, I know it's not KRCG. Okay. That's a TV station in Jeff City.
That's what I thought you meant, and I'm like,
no. So there's this story gets out there, and now it's being retweeted. There's no attribution whatsoever. Right. It doesn't say a Republican official says or someone close to Greitens says. It doesn't say anything.
Yeah, and we're supposed to believe that Greitens is confiding with some small-town radio in Springfield. That has never been Greitens style. I mean, come on.
No, there's been no Facebook post.
Yeah, until that happens, it's not believable.
All right, hang on. More of the Reardon Roundtable coming up on a Friday afternoon.
Now, back to the Reardon Roundtable. Once again, your host, Mark Reardon on KMOX.
Just a quick note here before we get back to the roundtable that there's still some crazy, crazy positive numbers at the U.S. Open. Dan Reardon, no relation, is out there at Shinnecock. He's going to join me in the next hour with an update, and Dustin Johnson's still playing very, very well. And our local guy from Chris Nagel from Wildwood, of course, yesterday finished +3, and he might make the cut. I think he just teed off about an hour ago. We'll keep you posted on that. Something else that's going on right now is the World Cup. And in fact, Portugal and Spain are playing. We have the monitor on in here, and these guys were watching this. John Lamping, you're big, big soccer guy.
Oh, big time.
Jane, you're a relatively big fan,
I like
too.
It. I wasn't, and then, you know, my husband was an All-American soccer player, and I didn't know anything, and then he taught me everything, and so international soccer, it's just better soccer.
And just to give you some insight into the conversation that happened when we're off the air, there was some heavy debate about how good looking Ronaldo was, and Jane loves Ronaldo, and John took issue with that. Is not as attracted to Ronaldo.
Jane can do better. Yeah. She can do better.
See, I like that. Now they have those. When my son was little, because he was obsessed with international soccer, my parents would go get him jerseys whenever they'd go somewhere. So we've got this all collection of all these international jerseys, and they have wall bangers, which are those life size stickers. Mm-hmm. Of athletes. And
right.
I told my husband, and I said, there's my Christmas present. Just get me a wall banger of Ronaldo. And no, I'm not going to do that.
I'm staying out of that way.
I
bring up the World Cup because, in Mr. Lamping, I'll start with you. This was, and you know I'm not as big a soccer fan.
Right,
although
not.
Ronaldo just had what I would refer to as a sick goal on a free kick. It was pretty amazing. Yeah. And I hope we don't ruin things. We won't give the score in case someone's taping that because people do that. But this news this week that the World Cup is coming in 2026. It's unfortunate St. Louis doesn't have a venue because we may get some games, but that's big news.
Huge news, yeah. It's unique in that it's three countries. So there's 80 games. There's 60 of them will be in the United States somewhere. St. Louis will probably be a training venue for at least one team. This will be the first time they expand the World Cup to 48 countries. So really everyone will be there. Like this time around, not only the United States, we're not in this one, but Italy's not in this one. There's a lot of really big clubs. Everyone will be here. The 1994 World Cup, I was out on the East Coast. One of my very dear friends ran the whole event in the Meadowlands Stadium. The 1994 World Cup set the record for attendance.
It did. My husband went to, what, Texas? I think they had, where did they have one?
Well, they were all over.
They were Soldier Field. They had some
across the country.
Field, right?
And they averaged 64,000 people at the game. That is a record for World Cup. This will be the largest money making venture. It's going to be brilliant. The downside will be it's at this time of the year, right? So in the middle part of the country, it'll be really hot. But it's something to look forward to.
Is it going to Kansas City?
Kansas City will definitely get it.
But they're going to get it not at their venue at Arrowhead.
Yeah, all the venues have to be at least 70,000. These will all sell out.
It'll smoke the NFL.
The countries will all travel. It'll be hard to get tickets domestically. It's exciting, and we need to get it back. And, you know, 94 is what really sprung MLS. And hopefully in 8 years from now, we're a more competitive team.
So let's tie it back to St. Louis here, just with the change in leadership in Jeff City with Governor Parson, because obviously there were some decisions made by the previous administration, the previous governor, that would not allow tax credits for the stadium, which kind of fell through for a variety of reasons. Can that be something that maybe reemerges in the future?
It certainly can be. Governor Parson, all things are possible through Governor Parson. Anything that requires state dollars, it's now possible that it could happen. The history behind the stadium financing, actually Governor Nixon had pre-funded, essentially created a mechanism to allow state dollars to flow through. About $60 million was going to happen. All Eric had to do was not say anything. And Eric, you can call him all kinds of things, but from the policy side, he was very fiscally conservative. And one of his first quotes was, "We're not going to build soccer stadiums for billionaires." It can now happen. The problem that we'll have is that the franchises have been awarded, and the MLS is now moving on to the next round, and the $150 million franchise fee will almost certainly be higher.
Yep.
I think the price of poker went up. I think Parson will do, if you ask him, if you hire the right lobbyists and you ask him to build a soccer stadium, you got a pretty damn good chance.
St. Louis is a soccer town, so it would be a shame
I'd be shocked if you see the political will for anyone in the city of St. Louis to want to run with this ball at this point. It would have to be a regional effort. People
Move
were very
county.
Disgruntled over Scott Trade and what happened with the last soccer deal.
But if you give that Board of Aldermen a chance to pass another tax increase, by God, they're going to do it. Let me tell you something. They don't even need a reason. They'll do it.
I agree. We have a whole tax that's going toward a transportation system that doesn't
exist. It's not being used, right.
So
some desserts
tax.
For you guys here. Fritz's did bring by some brownie blender mini creats, vanilla frozen custard, bakery brownie and hot fudge, brownie blender with chocolate as well, and then also some vanilla with bakery brownie and caramel in there, the brownie blender mini creats, courtesy of Fritz's frozen custard. So I didn't have this on the list of topics, but let me toss it out there because we're talking about different races. I had St. Louis County Executive Steve Stanger in yesterday. James, we're up against a primary here in less than 8 weeks between Mark Montavani, the Republican, who says he's a Democrat, and Steve Stanger, a conservative Democrat who's come under fire by his own county board and also by the media. Sarah, have you guys picked on Stanger too, I'm guessing?
A little bit. We've been largely hands-off on that, but we're working on something big.
So how big of an issue is this ethics complaint and the Northwest Plaza? Obviously, the concern there is you got hundreds of thousands of dollars in campaign donations from the developer who is doing that project. That's been called into question. His contention is, look, this is one of the biggest economic boosts that the county's had in a long time, and it's worth it, and I didn't do it just because they gave me money. So is that something that's going to hurt Steve Stanger into this election? I mean, the polling that I'm seeing doesn't even show this thing close.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that this guy exists yet, but I mean, and he's a Republican. The problem is he supported Greitens, who supported Right to Work, and it's going to be on the ballot at the same time
that's
as
the biggest
Right
thing.
To Work.
Yeah, I think that's
and
pretty
so I think,
big, too.
I think it's probably over, frankly. And so, I think Northwest Plaza is one of the best projects that's been done in the country. 2 million, and I've been a huge proponent of it, but 2 million square feet of dead mall space has been fully redeveloped and transformed. North County, which everybody gives lip service to, we got to go to these, distressed areas, and we did it. And I mean, the council, I got nothing for them. I think they're a bunch of kooks. So, I mean, you know what I mean? So you voted for it. It worked. In 5 years, it was a dead. In 5 years, it went from a dead mall to a fully, leased out space and area, and we're complaining about that. I'm trying to figure that out. I mean, everybody knew about the donations.
Well, it doesn't really. I mean, that's fine, but it doesn't really pass the smell test, does it?
Well, they knew that, though. That's what's funny about it. They knew about the donations when they voted for it. So I'm like, well,
that's what he said yesterday. He did make that clear yesterday.
It's like, well, okay. I mean, we knew. Yeah. Is that the way it's, you know, I mean, people give donations. Yeah. But they're disclosed.
Why, John, why didn't Mantovani run as a Republican? I mean, obviously, the answer would be because Republican can't win. However, Bill Corrigan and Rick Stream did come close. Well, you can argue that maybe this fall isn't the best because it's an off-year election coming off the presidential race.
He got taken out in a primary.
Well, he got taken out in a primary, but that was much different. Plus, well, I was leading the charge for Republicans to vote in the Democrat primary,
well,
so that had
70,
a difference.
70,000 Republicans voted 50, in the Democrat.
50,000, yeah. So 50,000 came in.
So,
yeah.
Look, speaking as a former St. Louis Countyan, The county is Democrat. That's what it is. It's 65% Democrat. Corrigan, I ran the same time Corrigan won. It was the Tea Party year. Corrigan lost by 5 points. Stream came very, very close. He lost by a point and a half or two. And that's because the Democratic Party split along racial lines and the African-Americans that supported Charlie voted for Stream. We didn't have that candidate this time. And every election cycle, every 2 or 4 years, that the chasm gets wider. You go out to Franklin County, Jefferson County, and my hometown, St. Charles County. That's where all the Republicans live now. It's very conservative. And so if you – and I think – I know Mark well enough, and he's a very accomplished person who feels compelled to try to fix the place that he lives in and where he's done business. And the only way you can do that is by being elected. And you can only be elected, in my mind, as a Democrat.
But he went real hard a couple of months ago with TV ads. And there was a lot of, I think, a lot of effort to build up his name recognition, which was non-existent. But then they've gone dead. Now, look, I get it. In the last 4 weeks leading up to the election, you're going to push hard. I'm sure we're going to see a lot of TV. But I'm guessing Stanger's going to outspend him probably about 5-1, if not more.
The governor's scandal sucked the political oxygen out of everything. And then I think when that first started, it wasn't necessarily clear where Right to Work would be on the August or November ballot.
It was not, right.
And I think the decision to put it on the August ballot really hurt Mantovani politically more than anybody else.
And it kills him. And, you know, because Labor, I mean.
Labor's going to support Stanger.
You think Right to Work passes?
Yeah. I think
defeating it?
I think defeating it is going to pass.
I think it is too. John Lamping on the roundtable this afternoon. Thank you very much. Enjoy the Fritz's frozen custard. Sarah Fenske from the RFT. Great to see you again. Thank you for coming in. Enjoy the weekend. John, happy Father's Day.
Same to you.
You got like 10 kids or something, don't you? You got a lot. Jane.
Yes.
Thank you. Just thank you from the bottom of my heart for being you,
blessing,
Jane.
And because you have custard.
And you're going to hang out in the next hour. We have Nicholas Ma, the son of Yo-Yo Ma, to talk about the new movie about Mr. Rogers opens today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.